This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Some people play by the rules, but the real game changers break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we're talking to the risk takers, the rebels, and the ones rewriting the playbook. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Near side, J.J. Paterka with a shot. There's a loose puck. Scores! Good hands by Tage Thompson over on that far side. Zucker just inside the blue line of the Capital Zone. Cross for a one-timer. Scores! Down the goal line, Zucker. Far side, Thompson! Scores! Logan Thompson got a piece of it, but Tage Thompson got more of it. Chickering, new stick and all. Lost the puck and it's stolen, and it's a breakaway attempt here for Buffalo. Quinn with the goal on a clear-cut breakaway. At the line, Samuelson with a shot, scores! Rasmus Dahlin's 500th game. It'll turn out to be a victorious one. 8-5, the final.
Wait a minute. Didn't Ovi score yesterday? Come on, man.
He did, but it's from
Wayne Gretzky.
Hey, you know what? It's not the tying goal. It's not the passing Gretzky goal. It's just one of the 890 that he scored over his life.
Well, I could understand any one of us being in a fog today. What's it like where you are?
Clear outside. I don't know why. Like, downtown Buffalo is really foggy, and we are pretty clear, and it's warm out here. Probably we're sending all of our fog your way, Duffer. But, know what? It was funny today because I was doing some work around the NHL and kind of seeing what happened last night in the games. And one of the tools that is very handy is when you go to NHL.com, there's always a tab that says all of last night's goal, all of yesterday's goals. Mm-hmm. So I click on it. And the Sabres segment, the Washington and Sabres segment of all of the goals is literally 2 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And then there's another game, and then they show Ottawa-Pittsburgh, and it's 15 seconds long. There was one goal. It was Crosby overtime power play goal. So the Sabres were 2 minutes long of highlights. Pittsburgh-Ottawa, 15 seconds. Boom, let's go, move on.
They were also 2 minutes the other day when Buffalo waxed Pittsburgh and chased Tristan Jarry, who incredibly posted the shutout last night as the Penguins embraced a youth movement and brought up two of their top prospects to have them in the mix, and they win 1-0 over Ottawa, who Buffalo is going to see next, and that is tomorrow as the road trip wraps up and the Sabres try for the season series sweep of the Sens.
And Buffalo beat Anton Forsberg the last time Ottawa was in Buffalo, and Anton Forsberg was fantastic yesterday for the Ottawa Senators. Got him a point. Like, if it's not for Anton Forsberg, they were not engaged in the game at all. Tristan Jarry was good, but Forsberg stole the show at the other end. And Ottawa, well, that was a point that they probably feel they got lucky to have. Yeah. And then
they're in great shape, though. They need about six more points, in my opinion, and they're good. So,
yeah, no, they're in great shape. And then at the end of the video sequence of all of the goals happening yesterday in the NHL was the LA Kings San Jose Sharks game. And let me tell you, it was like watching the Harlem Globetrotters highlight, because you got between the back passes, between the leg passes.
How about the Gavrikov little touch play?
The touch pass unbelievable. The Kopitar, like, facing the glass between the legs. It was unreal. And this game, at one point, it's like, okay, it's 4-1, halfway in the game. You're thinking the LA Kings are going to press cruise control. They're going to walk away with a big win against the San Jose Sharks, whatever. And they just kept on, like, being the Harlem Globetrotters. They wanted to win by 100, I feel, and they ended up winning 8-1.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where was this game played?
That was at crypto.com.
Yeah, of course. Like, obviously, who wins at home?
Oh, yeah. They're the best home team.
They didn't win against Toronto. Toronto snuck into that Pittsburgh-Vancouver-Buffalo realm and handed them a regulation loss. But anyway, the Kings came back with a vengeance against yet another, I don't know. I mean, I give credits for San Jose, that big win in the, you know, the up and down nature of that game against Toronto last week. Yeah, like they got that. But there's just, and I get it. They're so young and, you know, they've stripped away a lot of the veterans at the trade deadline and what have you. But it's tough to watch. They just go through these sequences where they're just like, what is going on here?
They were fun to watch against Toronto the other day.
Like that's what I said.
They were up 5-3 and you had to know. I would have bet the farm in that game that the San Jose Sharks were going to let it slip in regulation because we've seen it a million times. And then they won it in OT. But no, so that was that. But yeah, if you look to the Sabres yesterday, Duffer, 8-5. Is there, like, my question all night and all morning was, is there anything we can take away from that game? Yes, scoring 8 goals. Yes, Jack Quinn, Tate Thompson, a couple goals. There was Tucky, the way that he played. But I always do this exercise. If we were on a show called Capitals Live today, like, would we be like, oh, my goodness, how bad are we looking the last little bit here? Lost 3 in a row. Looked like a very undisciplined in everything that they did, penalty-wise, system-wise, whatever. They haven't picked a number one goalie. We assume it's going to be Logan Thompson, but this may open the door for Charlie Lindgren a little bit. I don't know. Like, I'm just saying, like, was it more Washington being that bad or Buffalo being that good? Both things could be true, but it was ugly for Washington yesterday.
Well, I'm not going to go too far down the path if we were hosting Capitals Live, other than the lead would have been Craig Laughlin's return, and we would have maybe run a little bit of B-roll about the game. But,
yes,
you know,
we wouldn't have been spending too much time on it.
Here's the thing. They have lost 3 in a row. They're 0-2-1. And remember the exercise I put you and the audience through about, I don't know, 3 weeks ago when I detailed every single aspect of the Capitals season in 10-game segments?
Yes.
And what was the pattern? Dominant 10, mediocre 10.
Yes.
But never below 500. But dominant 10, mediocre 10. Dominant 10, mediocre 10. So what happened after the last time they lost 3 in a row? All the veterans said, we're fine. And then they rattled off like a 9-1 streak.
Yeah.
And now they're back into the next 10, which is mediocre final 12, presumably to close out the season because everything's clinched and locked up. And it may still stumble for a couple of games and they'll probably turn it on and win 4 of the last 5. And everything will look rosy because it'll be a plus 110 point season.
Yep.
And everybody's going to be saying, wow, how did this team do it? They established one of the biggest goal differential turnarounds in NHL history among teams making the playoffs in each of those years. So I don't know. Like, I'm not worried about them, but I'm also not going to sit here and over-evaluate the wins either, because the win came on the heels of giving up 7 to Philadelphia, which should be the bigger talking point here, that those games can't happen, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, if you're going to be, I mean, they do happen to every team. Even Washington gave up 8, right? And they're a top 5, top five defensive team. Yeah, so so that happens. It's going to happen. And then you got games like Ottawa-Pittsburgh yesterday. It's a 1-0 overtime win. And you're looking at those two teams. Have, like, Tristan Jarry was in the minors or whatnot. Like, you're going to get some fluctuation in how the games are. But too much fluctuation is also not good. You have to have consistency in your play. And yes, the Sabres did not have Rasmus Dahlin on Saturday, but the words of Lindy Ruff after the game Saturday was very, very tough to hear. How they disrespected the game. How they, you know, so you go into Philadelphia, you get basically, you know, kicked to the curb after losing 7-4. And, you know, did you turn around? Yes. 8-5, fantastic. But I didn't seem that Tage Thompson's tone after the game wasn't like, woohoo, look at us. Like, look at how we scored 8. No, it was like, okay, well, you know what? We have to learn to play the right way. We have to learn. And we've shown that at times. But there's also the games like Philadelphia that have come and kind of put a wrench into the whole thing, saying, yeah, there's still a lot of learning to do. And even yesterday, I felt like there was still a learning to do from that game. Like, you give up five, you're not going to win too many in the NHL. Now, they pulled through. Fantastic. But there's some learning lessons in that way.
Capitals did fall to sixth defensively now in the NHL after that poor showing yesterday against Buffalo. So I think you and I are on very similar paths here as far as what to talk about, how much to talk about. And my line that, you know, kept bouncing around after the game last night and first thing this morning was, and it's similar to what we, yeah, I mean, I guess it's one of those fill in the blanks that we used to do.
Okay. Bring it back. Bring it back, Duffer.
Late season evaluations are blank.
Okay. So I've been through some seasons where we were in until the last game or the two games before the end of the season, and you play hard and you're giving everything you got. And I've been through some seasons where we were out. We were out early, and I think of my year with the New York Islanders. I think I was like 2-9-2 in my first 13 games, and then I didn't play for the longest time, and I finished the year 7-2-2. And I can't tell you that, oh, I was playing loose. No, I wasn't playing loose. I was scared to death that I wasn't going to get another contract, that, man, my season's going nowhere. Like, every game that I played, I put so much pressure on myself to play a good game, get a win. Like, it was important. So I can't say that it's too easy to say, oh, it's the end of the year, you're not making the playoffs, and everybody's playing loose. I don't think it's that easy. So late season evaluations are not as bad as maybe we think about, because you can still take some really good part of what you're seeing and project it moving forward. Is it 100% of what you should expect? No, it's not going to be, because it's not so much about you, but sometimes it's about the other teams. Like you just mentioned, the Washington Capitals, they're like, okay, they're locked in. You know, maybe it's like, you know what, this game is not going well for us. It's like, okay, we'll move on to the next. So it's not so much about you. Sometimes it's about the other teams and who you're playing. Even playing Philly Saturday, it's like Philly's not going anywhere. And, you know, maybe they decide to just change the way they played. They have a new coach. It's a new energy. So, but there's certain things you can evaluate individually. And you still practice, and you still do meetings, and you still are evaluating players in those practices and meetings. Who's getting involved? Who's asking questions? Who's putting what we're saying out on the ice? So there is some players that I think are having good late season evaluations right now. There is some that it hasn't really gotten off the ground, and it's still not getting off the grounds. And you have to compare. You have to compare the first 30 games, the last 30 games, the middle 20. You have to compare where you are throughout the whole year.
Well, I guess the real question is, how hard are the evaluations for the hockey department? I would say specifically the general manager, but I don't think, to me, it's a hockey department thing, right? Yeah. Like, it's not one person saying, nope, we're punting. Nope, we're giving him a 6-year deal. Like, it's not Kevin doing that solely here, right? Like, no. So.
And he's always said, like Duffer, he's always said, when we sign a player, it's the team that signs a player. When we draft a player, it's a team that drafts a player. It's not Kevin Adams at this or whatever. It's a group. That's what is the mentality behind all of it.
So what makes this relevant, I think, is obviously Jack Quinn had a major uptick on the weekend. But Jack Quinn had a very, 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 very hard to believe first half of this season. The struggles were so real for him offensively. And considering they've already extended Zucker, extended Greenway,
yep,
brought in Norris, continue to use Jiří as a top line center. Alex Tuch is a veteran. Tage Thompson is a veteran. JJ Paterka, in my opinion, is now a veteran based on his positioning in the lineup, the improvement, the point level that he has shown the last 2 years. Beck Malenstein is presumably not going anywhere. He has 1 year remaining. You're starting to run out of spots is how you change this. And yes, I'm assuming that based on missing the playoffs, they're going to want to change this.
Well, there's a need for change. Like, you
correct,
can't just roll
but
it out.
Where are you making the change, which ties it back to evaluations of players that you may choose to ultimately move off of? Like, I don't see there being a ton of wiggle room up front based on how I just laid it out. And I certainly don't think Zach Benson's going to be a throw-in in any deal. I think the rosy outlook for Benson is that maybe he should be starting his NHL, in the eyes of some, not me, but maybe he should be starting his NHL career next year. Well, guess what? He's starting as a 20-year-old with over 130 games of NHL experience already. That's exciting for me. Like,
that's
I love
it. That's exciting,
that.
But where does he fit? That's the thing. Right now, you're 100% right when you look at the forward group. I mean, I'm thinking I'd like to see Tyson Kozak start the season as a fourth line center. Mm-hmm. I have loved what I've seen, and this is a great evaluation of Tyson Kozak. Mm-hmm. He's not coming in saying, oh, I'm going to play loose at the end of the year. No, he's like, this is my chance to make a stand in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And Jack Quinn, I like what I'm seeing of Jack Quinn, and that's, you can evaluate Jack Quinn now, because I do feel that last season for Jack Quinn was a wash. The injuries, the Achilles, everything. And this year, at the start of the year, it was not good. There was a lot of wrong happening with Jack Quinn. But he has found a way to turn that around. And people are going to say, okay, but it's garbage time. I get it. But I also just said, you have to watch practice. You have to watch the details of the game. How involved are you in doing video and wanting to get better? And I feel like Jack Quinn has done a lot more of late to find that. And he's playing with JJ Paterka and Ryan McLeod, who have all been really clicking together. But I look at Zach Benson and I'm thinking, I almost don't see a spot for him in the top nine. Mm-hmm. Right? And I look at Jordan Greenway and I don't see a spot for him in the top nine. I would love the Sabres to add a top six winger to go along Norris and Thompson maybe. And then maybe Kulik is playing with Zucker and Tuch, because you're like, hey, you know what? Let's put Jiří with two veterans, Zucker and Tuch, and let's surround him with that. And maybe it's more of in the third line, but still, Zucker and Tuch are not, you know, going to go and say, our job is not to score. Jiří's mm-hmm. going to add to it. And I like McLeod, Paterka, Quinn together. But then it leaves Benson in a little bit of a limbo. It leaves Krebs in a little bit of a limbo. If you look and you say Malenstein, Kozak, and Greenway's your fourth line, like, it leaves really a lot of pieces that are kind of like the extra right now. And I think that's going to be the challenge this summer, is how do you move on and have a different look team? Mm-hmm. Because over the years we've seen it was, okay, Gergensen's and Oposo, and it was always the same kind of return, right? And they've made a change from that this summer. And Malenstein has looked really good.
And in season, based on the Cousins and Norris deal.
100%. But it's got to continue.
Right.
And I think that's what is going to happen. I really feel like that is going to continue. And those extra pieces up front, where you need them to help you, is in what you can get in return on the back end. You almost feel like you need a top six winger to be with Norris and Thompson and some of that help on the back end. Because I really think you need to find a good partner with Owen Power. And Bernard Docker has been nice, but I don't feel like Bernard Docker is a top 4D. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see Dahlin and Byron back together. And I would like to see a really good partner for Power. And then you would have your strong top four. But that's still a big question mark when it comes to the summer.
So you feel if trades are to be made, they will be to address a different look on the blue line more than anywhere else? Or you still think, based on everything we just said, that they may try to add a top six winger?
I think a top six winger and a top four defenseman. That okay. is your... And now we're not talking about the goaltending just yet. That also is going to be a point of conversation moving forward. What does the goaltending look like? James Reimer has been really good, but I'm not going into next year thinking that James Reimer is a part of my goalie tandem. Look, maybe a guy like James Reimer could be a number three and say, hey, you know what? Everybody's rolling three goalies this year, these years. You know, everybody's got depth, a good number three. And I think that's why James Reimer was brought in this year, almost to be a good number three to Luukkonen and Levi. And then start the season in Prague, come back. It doesn't go the way you want. Okay, let's move Levi down to Rochester. Now we have Reimer and Luukkonen, and that's the way we're going to do it. Fine. But I'm looking at next year. I don't think Reimer is in your top two. And I don't think you're really going into the year thinking Luukkonen and Levi are going to be it either. So there's a change in the top six in the forward position. There's a change in the top four in defense. And there's a big question mark in goal. And that's the three biggest thing that I'm looking at evaluating right now. I don't need to evaluate McLeod for the rest of the year. I know what I got. I don't need to evaluate Zucker for the rest of the year. I know what I got. But I need to continue evaluating mostly around the league. Hey, who's the top six forward we can get? Who's a top four defenseman we can get? And what's the question mark and goal?
You look good.
That's not me.
I know that it's was, not you.
That was our telestrator, not hot, still
it's
acting the, up.
It's haunting
in
you.
Studio. It's taunting me. I was you so upset yesterday. Every time we fix the telestrator, 2 minutes before I'm about to do my breakdown, it just, you know, stop working.
Video breakup is temporary. Please do not adjust
that
your
That was a big video breakdown.
What was the one thing as a child that used to interfere with your television the most?
Were
you blessed with cable right from the outset?
Not from the outset, but I do remember like the early days of VCRs when the tracking was the big thing. You had to adjust the tracking. If somebody gave you a tape and all of a sudden the tape is like, whoa, you have to adjust the tracking.
Oh my
that
goodness.
Was the, my biggest like, probably obsession as a child with TV was the tracking and the VCR.
Sunday night dinners. I'm in the basement watching NFL football. Roast beef is being carved upstairs with an electric knife. And whenever that came on, the television would break up.
The vacuum cleaner, the hair dryer, and the carving knife, the electric carving knife, was a killer. You'd get a snowstorm in your TV as soon as those things came on.
How many times has somebody blown a fuse because of a hairdryer?
Oh my boy. Yeah. Well, that was what just happened on MSG. For those wondering on the WGR side, we had a little bit of a snow shower coming up here on our screen.
Yeah. So Paterka's at 59 points now. McLeod is at 47. And I mean, these are significant. We've been talking a lot about Thompson 40, Tuck 30, McLeod 20 as far as goals. But if you were to sit there at the start of the year and say, oh, well, JJ is going to nicely add to his career season last year, and he's going to do so by having basically the same amount of goals, but way more helpers, which I think is a good development for this team. It's funny because their centermen as constructed right now, top two, if you will, between Norris and Kulik, like they're kind of goal scoring centers more than they are pass happy centers. So you need some playmaking wingers, right? And so I think this is a nice development.
Especially if you had Norris Thompson and player X on the left wing.
Correct. Yes.
That needs to be a puck possession, playmaking type of winger.
Yep.
That's the evaluation. That's why like we're having these conversations 1 hour a day on weekdays. Mm-hmm. I think the hockey department is having these conversations 7 hours a day. 7 days a week, right? Like, who is a playmaking winger that would fit with Norris and Thompson?
Mm-hmm. Was there any? So your centermen next year are blank.
Well, my centermen next year would be Norris, McLeod, Kulik, and I like to say maybe it's just because he's a new toy and fresh out of the box, but the Tyson Kozak angle of it, I really like what he's done. I like that he seems to have found himself a very nice kind of role, right? And Peyton Krebs, let's not, like, Peyton Krebs is playing really good right now as a third line center between Zucker and Tuck. But I don't feel like he's labeled as a top nine. Mm-hmm. And if I want to give Kozak that spot, you know, Peyton Krebs started the season this year as the extra forward. I don't know that I'm getting to where I want with Krebs, and maybe I got to start again with Kozak.
Mm-hmm. Now, both of them are wing capable, right?
Yeah, but we have, there's so many wingers on the roster right now. Like, I've got Jordan Greenway and Beck Malenstein as fourth line wingers. You know, I feel that that's, you know, you have a lot of players. And again, you need depth. So are you going to keep an extra forward or two? Like, this year they started 13 forward, 8D. I don't know that that's the ideal construction. I'd much rather have 14 forwards and 7 defensemen moving forward. So do you keep a Kozak as maybe the extra at the start of the season? And do you keep a Roseanne as an extra at the start of the season? Because he's kind of getting to that point now, maybe. But I still think you need to add a top six forward, preferably a winger, playmaking winger. Mm. And you probably have 7 defensemen. And that doesn't count, like, if you think that Ryan Johnson is ready to come up and right. others as well.
Lots to get to as we continue the Monday edition of Sabres Live. We are looking ahead to tomorrow when the Sabres take on the Senators, and that will be the finale of the season series. And the big stories around the NHL, St. Louis continues to roll. Leon Draisaitl is a 4-time 50-goal scorer, just a phenomenal feat accomplished by him on Saturday night against the Calgary Flames. The Amerks had a great weekend, save for missing out on 1 point yesterday. And of course, your input at Sabres Live on social. We'll get to all of it as we continue Sabres Live after this.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. Sabres sends tomorrow. And Sabres fans, you can now vote on this season's Rick Martin Memorial Award, awarded to the player who best embodies on-ice excellence, resilience, and dedication to community. Visit Sabres.com/RICO. That's RICO. To vote today. Welcome back on Sabres Live. We'll get to action upcoming momentarily, but on the heels of last segment and wow, hot teams around the NHL. St. Louis Blues, Marty. This is insane. I joked with you off air last week after they had won their 8th in a row. I said, yeah, well, good luck to the Blues. They're going into Colorado. And they won. 2-1. They've won 9 in a row. They are 16-2-2 in their last 20 to sit still in wild card 2 in the West.
Well, I mean, they could be in wild card 1 because they are tied with the Minnesota Wild right now at 87 points, although the Wild have a game in hand. But if you would have told me last week that the St. Louis Blues are going to catch the Minnesota Wild, I would have said, I believe you. Maybe in the last week of the season, not before April 1st. So that's the biggest thing. Jim Montgomery even said after they beat the Colorado Avalanche, he said, you know what? We're on a hot streak right now. Like, I mean, there's no denying, right? They are playing extremely well as a team. They're getting excellent goaltending. Bennington's been playing well, but Joel Ofer's not been too shabby either. And yes, Minnesota is going to get Erickson Ek and Kirill Kaprizov back at some point. They both practiced with their team over the weekend, but there's no timetable just yet. But I'm looking at this, and if I am the Winnipeg Jets, just say, and I'm looking at who am I going to play in the first round of the playoffs, the you know, St. Louis or Minnesota, I'm thinking right now, Minnesota is going to slip into wild card two and St. Louis is going to be wild card one before the end of the year. I mean, that's how hot and how good St. Louis have been playing.
Minnesota at New Jersey tonight among games in the NHL. Calgary is at Colorado, and this goes back to the discussion, the question you prompted me with last week about would you rather have points in the bank or games in hand? Yeah, let me tell you, it starts feeling ugly and high pressure for the Flames when you realize you have to win every single game in hand and still hope that you're going to find a way to get past the St. Louis Blues.
The odds for the Flames and the Canucks to make it have now gone to almost zero. And the Flames maybe have a little bit more light at the end of that tunnel because they have two games in hand on the Wild and three on the Blues.
Yeah.
But I still think that if you're the Calgary Flames, you're not catching the Blues. Like, the Blues are too hot. You have to look at the Wild. The Vancouver Canucks lost to the Jets yesterday 3-1. They took a 1-0 lead. They lost to the Jets. And I almost feel like that is the end of the road for the Canucks. Unfortunately, they have 8 games left. If they go 6-2, they get to 93 points, which would mean that the Wild and the St. Louis Blues only have to play 500 hockey, basically, or a little bit more, but they'll get to 93. And the Canucks have Dallas, Vegas twice, and Colorado, I think, in those 8 games left. So they have to go almost perfect against those as well. Like, I just think the Canucks are too little, too late, and it's not going to happen.
And then Calgary, obviously, as mentioned, up against Colorado tonight. What do you make of the incredible Battle of Alberta Saturday? Like, the Oilers are so decimated right now, injury-wise. Draisaitl comes back, maybe sooner than some thought, whatever. He has a 3-point game in a 3-2 overtime win where he scores the late tire with just over 3 minutes left and then the overtime winner, goals 50 and 51 on the season. This guy at age 29 is a 4-time 50-goal scorer. And if we're going to continue to live in this world and talk about, I never could have imagined this, i.e. Ovechkin soon to pass Gretzky, like Leon's got 4 50-goal seasons at age 29. Yeah. Could we not see Leon Draisaitl have 8 50-goal seasons and then only be one away from the record held by Bossy, Gretzky, and Ovechkin?
I think it's possible. Look, Leon Draisaitl is not considered a sharp shooter by any means. You think about the sharp shooters, you're thinking Austin Matthews is a sharp shooter, right? You're thinking of the years of Ovechkin and Stamkos, and Draisaitl is just a little bit different. I'll tell you this, the 50th and the 51st goal of his season, they were sharpshooting moments. Moments where you're like, how does this go in? And it's the way that he releases the puck, that it slides off the stick. He beats Dustin Wolf, who was having a fantastic game. Unbelievable game. And it looks like he made him look like silly in the way that he shot the puck and scored both instances. And for that reason, you know, I know that there's going to be a lot of debate when it comes down to the MVP, the Hart Trophy, at the end of the year. You know, is Connor Hellebuck going to get the votes to maybe win it? Look, Dominik Hasek was the ultimate MVP from a goaltending perspective. Jose Theodore and Carey Price both won, but it was kind of like, okay, like they were good, but not like Hasek was dominant. Hellebuck's having one of those dominant years. He could be that guy, but Draisaitl is definitely, for me, the MVP of this season. Without him, the Oilers, maybe they don't make the playoffs because McDavid hasn't had the fantastic season that we all know that he could have, and Draisaitl has basically been putting the team on his back. So for me, Draisaitl is the MVP this year especially him coming back and getting those 2 goals and getting over 50.
He leads in goals, leads in game-winning goals, leads in first goals, leads, I think, in even-strength points across the NHL. If he's not the leader, he's tied for the lead. So
he is tied with Nathan MacKinnon for 73 even-strength point.
So it's so impressive how consistent he has been. I mean, even... like, I get it. Matthews had a 60 and a 69 as far as goal scoring. Those are his 2 50-goal seasons.
Yeah.
Like, Draisaitl's got 4 of them. It is truly remarkable. And he could be the only 50-goal scorer
this most year. Likely will be.
Like Nylander's been hot, so I won't rule it out. He's been, you know, but that's saying something, I think, in this season of the NHL. So another tip of the cap.
Nylander has 8 games to get 8 goals.
Right.
So he would have to be on an incredible, like, run to get to 50. But this could be the season where we only see 150 goal scorers, and that would be Leon Draisaitl. And it's not that scoring has been down this year. No, it hasn't. Look, power play scoring and power plays have been down this year, but scoring has been at the same rate. It's just
no power plays are spread. Up, I believe. Dreger talked about it. Everything's over 20%. That's the thing.
No, power play percentage, but the power plays, like there's been 100 less power play in the NHL this year. And if you considered power play goals that would come with that. So it's not like the goals have not been there. It's just that it's been more spread around the general sense of the players.
Okay, well, as we look at the goal-scoring leaders in the NHL and wonder whether Nylander can be the second 50-goal scorer, Thompson, okay, let's do this exercise. Who scores 40? Thompson?
Thompson does, yes.
Point?
Point, and Kyle Connor will get there as well.
Ovechkin? Obviously.
Ovechkin needs 5, right?
He needs 3. To get to 40.
Well, yeah, he needs 5 to get to the best Gretzky. So I'm saying he'll get to 40.
Jake Guentzel, 3 away. Obviously. You're not playing along. Sam Reinhardt, 36.
No, I think anybody that's got 36 and less won't get there.
Oh, my gosh.
Scheifele, Reinhardt, Tavares, Pastrnak.
John Tavares, this is perfect. This is like Jeff, producer Jeff, orchestrated this. Do you know why? I have two. Jeff, come on, show it.
Two what?
Two names. We're stuck in this goal scoring graphic. Two names on my page that I'm interested in the summer. Who are they?
Okay, so you're obviously talking about these players that have been performing.
No, you don't listen sometimes. Who was the last name on the list that I started then begging profusely? John Tavares.
John Tavares, yeah.
Oh my God. Jeff, does he?
Well, no, have, but
like this, I'm the one that's been claiming hearing issues since September.
I don't want John Tavares.
Do I need to bring him to all the testing that I'm doing?
You got to do more tests. Tavares is a good player. I don't think Tavares is going anywhere but Toronto. So I think, unfortunately, it's not going to happen.
We have Norris, Kulik, McLeod, Kozak. You don't think John Tavares could help?
I think he could help.
Okay.
Tavares is signing only in Toronto at probably a discounted price just to stay with the Leafs.
Are you willing to then overpay for Sam Bennett? Because they're the only two centers on my list.
Overpaying. So those are centers. I think my centers are all set.
Okay.
When I have Norris, Kulik, McLeod.
I hear you.
So Bennett could play wing. Tavares could play wing. And then you can switch back and forth. I get that. Is Sam Bennett the playmaking winger that I would pay $8+ million a year? Because that's what it's going to take at the very least for Sam Bennett.
Right.
He's not. So would I like a Sam Bennett on my team? Yes. But I'm not going to overpay to bring him in because I don't think that's what I need in my team right now, the way that I have it constructed.
What do you need?
I need a playmaking winger.
Do you have any on your list? I haven't gone down that path.
Oh. I have Mitch Marner on my list. You talk about John Tavares. I have Mitch Marner on my list. Mitch
Bring
Marner will get. Well, I'm not bringing John Tavares because he's not coming. But
how do you know that? Why are you so locked in on this?
Is John Tavares wanted to play for the Leafs? The whole thing.
He's had 7 years of pajamas in Leafland.
Yeah. And he's still performing, and he will stay there because he's enjoying it.
So is Mitch Marner. Why wouldn't he stay there?
Well, because they may not give him the money that he wants. I will overpay for Mitch Marner. I will give him $14 a year for Mitch Marner for 7 years. Come on, let's go. You're going to play with Norris and Thompson. I'm going to have that top line. Look out. Like, Mitch Marner is my guy, but I don't think that's going to happen either.
Okay. So Marner or Tavares, this or that, more likely to be a Sabre?
Well, I think it would be Marner because right. I really don't think Tavares would leave Toronto. Maybe he can, but I really don't see it happening.
Where is Mitch Marner most likely to play next year?
You know what? I hate to say it, but
oh no.
Could it be Florida? Could it be like Tampa or Florida, a team that is going to always seem like to be doing the Vegas thing now and swing for the fans? They brought in Brad Marchand, but he's out at the end of the year. He doesn't have a contract, right? Maybe they don't re-sign him. They just brought him in for the rest of the year, and then they're looking at a Marner to come along with their team down there.
Wouldn't Vegas be more likely to do the Vegas thing?
Yeah, Vegas could do the thing. And with the, you know, I think it's those teams that have been very aggressive are going to be aggressive at a Marner but why not? I have a t-shirt. Why not us? Like, if you are built the way you're built right now and you look at your roster and you say, we need a top line winger. Mm-hmm. Like, if one of them comes up on free agency, you don't have to give anything up. You can trade other players to go acquire, maybe help on defense, maybe even help increase, whatever. But you have somebody that all you have to do is overpay to try to make it happen. I would look at Marner and think that would be a good fit.
Do you remember what my mumbling precipitated when we were going through the game highlights and the empty netter last night? Eric Krebs into the empty net for his eighth of the year.
Yes.
What did you think I said?
No, I don't remember what you
said. You thought you heard Jerry Korab with
Jerry
Korab.
No, it's because it's not what you said. It's what I wrote on my sheet.
Oh,
my Krebs looked like I wrote Korab for eight of the year.
Well, I assumed it was my pronunciation.
Yeah, no, it was my writing that was terrible.
Okay, well, it caused me to go do the research, and Jerry Korab did, in fact, score one empty net goal as a Sabre. It was in November.
Was it his eighth of the year in late March?
I was so close. He scored an empty netter in Detroit, November 18th of 1978. And the then comparison, the side-by-side, okay, who's going to end their career with more points as a Sabre, Krebs or Korab?
Oh, well, what? I don't know what Korab is at.
Let's see, that's the trick here. That's why I asked it.
I almost had time to pull Jerry Korab's hockey reference page while you were talking, and then my screen went all A-wire. So I would think that Korab is ahead of Krebs right now in points.
Yeah, by almost 200. So I'm going to stick with Korab as the higher score. Yes. Jerry, I was slightly off last night. I said 73 to 78. It was 74 to 79 that were his most productive years in Buffalo. He ended with 283 points as a Sabre. Krebs has 88 right now. We will take the break, come back with best and worst of the weekend here on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, Marty, I feel like I've emptied the tank already, so why don't you handle best and worst of the weekend?
Oh, best is producer Jeff being able to give us best and worst because some of the content is amazing. So Macklin Celebrini, Friday night, the Rangers are in town to play San Jose. He gets out to the parking lot, the back parking lot behind the building at the Shark Tank, and the Rangers bus hit his car. So there's this, like, 18, 19-year-old kid, like, my car got hit, right? So, but funny story, years ago when I was with the Sabres, I had a Porsche 911 Turbo and I had it backed against the wall, the cement wall, right? And the hot tub maintenance people did not see that it was there. So when they went to back into a spot, they crushed my car like pretty bad. Like, it was, you know, the front was down. They repaired it. It was fine. But yeah, the hot tub repairman crushed my Porsche 911 Turbo in the back parking lot.
I hope you and Macklin get to commiserate over these life moments at some point moving forward.
The poor repair guy, he was white as a ghost. Like, I'm like, it's okay. It's just a car. Don't worry about it. But
Any other personal, you know, bests and worsts that you consumed?
So best and worst, the New York Yankees and their torpedo bats, right? My son was at the game Saturday when they hit 3-on-3 pitches and it was incredible. But so it's best because it's what sports should be all about. Like smart people trying to find an edge. So this grad student from MIT with the Yankees found that some players don't hit the sweet spot. Aaron Judge doesn't use a torpedo bat because he already hits the sweet spot, but some others don't. And you need to move the sweet spot around so they work these bats in a way that the sweet spot is in a different location. And, well, they've crushed 1,000 home runs over the weekend, so you got to give them credit. So it's best, but the worst is that it took that long for somebody to figure out that the sweet spot is important in baseball.
Trash cans work.
Yeah, go Astros.
My best of the weekend is the ongoing excellence of Noah Östlund.
Yes.
He has been so good in so many ways for the Amerks. Now 34 points in his last 31 games. Amerks have just 8 games remaining in the regular season, including home on Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow on Sabres Live.